From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Our world was movies, and that's everything we would reference from. Like, that day when we went to the beach, it reminded me of the sand and Lawrence of Arabia. Little things like that that you don't hear people say.
Govinda Angulo is one of the six cinema-obsessed brothers featured in the new documentary, The Wolf Pack. As the boys grew up in New York, their father rarely allowed them to leave the family's apartment, but he did let them watch hundreds of movies. Once they started to venture out on their own, a chance encounter with filmmaker Crystal Moselle led to the Wolfpack movie and to Sundance. But first on the News Banter, new revelations on the Sony hack, and will NBC dump Trump? Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my fellow banterer, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, a huge piece coming out, well, a trilogy of pieces in Fortune magazine about the Sony hack. And, you know, we covered that closely at The Hollywood Reporter. We talked about it on the air. As we record, only the first part of this six-month-long investigation is in our hands. But there is some new material in that, including stuff that drives home the degree of the lack of security at the studio, which had been discussed. It says the attack itself wasn't necessarily all that sophisticated. It could have been more so, but it didn't need to be because apparently Sony, according to one source who talked to them, you know, the rooms that were empty with computers where people had logged in and walked away, and anybody, including the janitor, could have come in and just had their way with the Sony internal system.
Yeah, and a lot of those problems are tied to cost cutting and some of the financial pressures that the studio has been under. And, you know, there's this other aspect to it where Michael Lynton, the CEO, who has come out of this relatively unscathed. I mean, Amy Pascal, the co-chairman, really kind of took the fall for this. She lost her job and the racially insensitive emails came out from her. And
Lots of embarrassing material. Yeah.
A lot of embarrassing stuff. And she has basically become
the face, yes.
Figurehead of this scandal. But this series of articles really points the finger more at Michael Lynton and the things that he didn't do. He apparently ignored a recommendation from the Rand Corporation, where he's on the board, to beef up security, to not do this movie because, you know, there could be some problems with assassinating Kim Jong-un in a graphic nature in an international comedy. And I think this is really going to increase the amount of scrutiny on Lynton.
Yeah, I mean, he's went on NPR in December and said that Sony was extremely, this is a quote, extremely well prepared, and that had nonetheless had suffered this worst cyber attack in U.S. history, as he put it. But according to this article, it wasn't that hard and they weren't prepared. And further, yes, he looks like he had multiple warnings, including from an associate at Rand and other places. And they just forged ahead. And I feel like Sony is sort of dribbing and drabbing out the cost of this over different quarters, you know, $15 million here and a few more than there. But there are a lot of lawsuits pending. And I would think that all of this material talking about how poorly prepared the studio was, and I mean lawsuits from employees who are exposed by way of this hack, you know, whose social security numbers and other information was made public, I would think this wouldn't help Sony in defending those lawsuits.
No, I mean, assuming a lot of this stuff is true, which we don't know yet, that's something I'm sure their lawyers are evaluating right now.
Yeah, so a lot more to come on that. Meanwhile, Bill Cosby is in court. He is trying to fight their disclosure of some material in an old sex abuse lawsuit, which in theory should be made public after 2 years. It could be unsealed. This is a suit in Pennsylvania, and this involves the alleged sex assaults that I don't know how many women have now told stories of this. He is claiming there's no public interest in revealing these records, and he is fighting it and interestingly saying it might be embarrassing if these records were unsealed.
Yeah, that's the most hilarious, if you can even say that word in connection with this stuff, aspect of this. I mean, he's claiming, first of all, that he is not a public figure, which in my experience, I mean, Bill Cosby would be the definition of a public figure.
I think so. I mean, you could ask Coca-Cola or Jell-O if they thought he was a public figure.
Yeah, and he had the number one sitcom in America for how many years? He's been, you know, touring the country even as these sex abuse allegations have been made against him. He is a public figure. I'm sorry. But he also claims there's, quote, no legitimate public interest in this old sex abuse lawsuit that was brought by Andrea Konstad and was settled about 9 years ago. I think that this is going to be a very thin argument. There is definitely a public interest in this. This has become a national debate over, you know, how long the statute of limitations should be, you know, whether he should be brought to task for some of these allegations that are coming out about things that have happened. It's not one woman. It's not five women. It's not even 10 women. It's dozens of women that have come forward. So I just don't understand how this is not something that should be disclosed.
Meanwhile, also in the theater of the absurd, I guess, Univision, I'm not calling them absurd, I want to be clear, has announced that they are not going to broadcast the Miss Universe pageant because Donald Trump, who is allegedly running for president by his own account, had made some comments in which he said that, which he took the Mexican government to task for the border situation and some trade deals, and basically said that Mexicans who are coming across the border are rapists.
Yeah, I mean, that the level of discourse from Donald Trump has just gone so far down into the gutter. It's not surprising that Univision, whose employees are about 80% Latino, would come right out and say this is unacceptable for us. The fact that this is the first real repercussion from some of the outlandish things that Trump is saying, I think that is a significant marker here. You know, this is a $13 million deal. Trump claims he's going to sue them and get the money. That's a separate legal issue. But what it does is it puts all of his relationships with various media organizations in doubt. I mean, NBC, we're told, is evaluating whether they want to move forward with their relationship with Donald Trump. He's on Celebrity Apprentice. They broadcast Miss USA. I would not be surprised if NBC cut ties with Trump as well.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter.
I'm on the road, but a quick update. After we recorded, NBC did in fact dump Trump, citing the company's value for respect and dignity for all people. Trump said actually it was his idea to leave NBC, but either way, he'll no longer appear on Celebrity Apprentice and the Miss USA and Miss Universe pageants, which his company co-produces with NBC, will no longer be carried on that network.
This year's Grand Jury Prize winner for a documentary at Sundance was a movie about the power of movies.
My parents didn't encourage us to communicate with society, so we were kind of shut off. So movies opened up another world.
Govinda Angula was one of six brothers featured in The Wolf Pack, directed by Crystal Mosell. Both are our guests today. The Wolf Pack tells the story of six brothers who were rarely permitted to leave their family's apartment in government-subsidized housing on New York's Lower East Side. The children were homeschooled by a loving mother but kept inside by a domineering father who told them to fear the outside world. But he also introduced them to movies. The boys watched whatever they could get their hands on and eventually started reenacting scenes from some of their favorites, writing out entire scripts by hand and creating elaborate sets and costumes.
The movies that predated the 1970s was all movies that shaped cinema as is. We learned film history, so we understood that, but we couldn't play those parts or reenact those parts. We had to pick movies that spoke to us and with a large group of men getting into trouble.
The ones that spoke to you, like your, what would you say, Quentin Tarantino?
Tarantino, definitely, because Tarantino, we could feel his energy in all his movies and the little stories. It was just this fascination with movies and movie references. It's a way that's shouting, movies are cool, and, you know, cinema is cool. We could feel that. And the characters that spoke to us the most, it really stuck out in Quentin's movies. And Reservoir Dogs was one of the biggest.
Right. The kind of cartoonish violence of Tarantino. Was that a release for you guys, being pent up together all the time, do you think?
Yeah, I would say, because it's going to the extremes. You know, people yelling and just using the F word repeatedly and then doing the sound effects for the gunshots. And it's all with a big bang, and we love that.
If I didn't have movies, life would be pretty boring.
This outfit is made out of cereal boxes and yoga mats.
Aspiring filmmaker Crystal Mosell lived in the same neighborhood as the Angulo family. And when she happened to catch sight of the Wolfpack brothers walking six abreast, all wearing sunglasses, she was instantly curious.
The thing that I remembered most was their hair. They just had this long hair. I mean, Govinda's hair was like, you know, well past his waist.
And people can't see him right now, but it is not past his collar.
And there's just something that really intrigued me, and I instantly or instinctually ran after them.
You ran after them?
Yeah. I don't even know what came over me. It just happened.
And I mean, how much had you guys been out and about at that point, Govinda?
I think for about a week or so.
Just a week?
Maybe 2 weeks. But it was the first time we all went out unsupervised as a group together. So the first time we were walking around the streets of New York like a pack of wolves.
So what did you guys make of her?
It was an interesting day that night because she asked the same questions that a lot of people were asking, was, are you all brothers? So we saw that she was a person who was, you know, really interested in us. And then when she told us what she does for a living and she's a filmmaker, that was sort of the hook.
I would guess so.
Exactly. And then we just started talking and she was, where are you guys from? And, you know, she used to live around that neighborhood. So I think we made a good connection there, and she became the first friend that we would invite over to our place as a guest and over for dinner. So things just started happening. It was very organic and it came really natural.
So it felt natural. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out the negotiation, like from, hi, are you guys brothers, to, can I come over, Crystal? How do you?
I will tell you that. So it was really a friendship that, you know, we had this common thing. We loved movies, we loved the cinema, and we all wanted to make movies. And I was already like on my way. So we would meet in the park and look at cameras and talk about films and, you know, about screenplays and just generally about, you know, cinema. And eventually after, you know, that was like the summer of 2010, in the fall, they invited me to come over to their house. So it was just like, it was a friendship.
So did you go home and tell your folks, hey, there's this lady and she seems like she's cool and we'd like to have her come by?
Well, we didn't initiate the idea of having her over to our apartment. We just told our mom we met someone who's a director, and Crystal's friend Horetzi too. We were like, we're with a producer. So those names just registered really strong in our brains because we knew what that meant. And I think mom was really excited too, because at that point, mom and dad were enforcing the idea that you should now go out and do what you want. You know,
both
you
parents.
Feel good about both parents.
Because I thought mom was on board. I wasn't so sure about your dad.
Dad sort of drifted from having a say in anything that went on in the household.
To less having a say.
Yeah.
So one thing that people might think without having seen the film is that you guys were unsophisticated, but you had a kind of sophistication, even though you hadn't been out in the world that much, especially with respect to movies. And did you guys know, like, what IMDb was? Did you go and look Crystal up on IMDb? Like, how did you make sure she was who she said she was and was a person with, you know, a lot of people claim to be something in the movie business.
Yeah.
But how did you guys decide that this was the thing?
Well, we felt that she was coming from a good place, and I don't think we had any worries. Is this fake? Is someone just, you know, playing us or whatever? And we knew when we made the first phone call, and then we wanted to hang out. And we thought, you know, let's explore this. Let's pursue this. Let's see what happens. And she took us to Washington Square Park. She brought a camera because she knew we wanted to play with cameras, just get a hands-on experience at doing the thing we love the most. And then from that day forward and meetings that would come in the future, we just knew.
Your intuition was that she was okay, and in this case, it served you.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny that after being, I mean, funny, odd, that, you know, being brought up with a certain paranoid mindset about the outside world, you would rely on intuition to trust someone with your story.
Yeah. I think when we broke out, we sort of knew immediately that the world's not that bad. Everyone's really nice. So.
Well, not everyone, but I say this as a parent, but many people are. I think you probably felt to some degree protective. Did you help to bring the kids out into the world in a sort of way that you thought about and executed very carefully?
No, I mean, they were exploring the world and I was there to capture it. I think that definitely, like, earlier on, I guess they would ask me questions. But then, like, you know, they really just started venturing out on their own, and I, you know, took a stepped back and just recorded their process of going out in the world.
Did you guys all agree, like, that this was a good idea? Was there anyone saying, eh, I don't know about this? I mean, did you understand, first of all, how this could potentially impact your lives?
I think we were just boiled with so much excitement at that moment. Crystal was introducing us to a lot of her friends who were also filmmakers and photographers, and then documenting this change that was coming into our world. We were just like, this is great, everything that we're doing here. We're sort of helping each other too, because we'd always talk about movies. And then when we made the decision, Crystal made that, I want to make a documentary about you guys, we were like, that's great, let's do it.
Do you ever sort of start trying to play a little bit into the idea of the film? I mean, you guys had staged films in your apartment, in your own little, you know, your home version of films. So you had thought like filmmakers in the past.
Right. We were thinking about moments when our mom made the phone call.
To her mother, who she hadn't spoken to in obviously many, many, many years.
More than 20 years, yeah. And at that time, we were thinking like documentary filmmakers. This isn't a good moment for this project that we're doing. We're going to shoot this. And Mukunda, he taped that scene.
Oh, so you weren't necessarily, where they were shooting and helping with your project, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea what their story was when I first met them. It took me like about a year to realize what was happening. But they, as people, were so open. They didn't feel jaded. They're so excited about life. And that's what really attracted me to the situation. Sure. I just was like, my mind was blown by these people.
I mean, when did you get to see, like, I thought the costumes, some of them were amazing.
Probably like 5 months in, I went to their house for the first time, and they were getting ready for their Halloween celebration.
Right, which is in the film.
All the art on the walls. That's where, I mean, I was just totally inspired by their creative side. They're kind of like an outsider artist.
Yeah, it feels, just watching it, like, you know, your mom was really important in bringing that stuff out in you, and correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like the homeschooling that you had, there was this artistic element which came, I assume, was from her? I don't know.
Mom was responsible for a lot of things, love being the biggest of them all. Dad opened the world to movies, and he sort of gave us all the freedom you could want with just watching any kind of movie, despite your age.
There's a lot of violent movies you all were watching and reenacting, too.
Yeah. But I think both of them understood that exposure to material that's otherwise considered unsuitable for children, the way you presented, we could distinguish reality from the movies.
I mean, it's kind of funny, though, that in odd again, that your father would be like, the world is bad, don't go out there, but watch all of this, which is terrifying. I mean, didn't it scare you when you were kids to watch that stuff, or you just really had that sense it wasn't real?
Yeah. Some movies painted a picture, like Taxi Driver was being one of the violent New York City movies. And we thought, I wonder what it's like out there, because the Taxi Driver was our reference or our window to the city that we live in.
Right.
So we were completely taken aback when we first broke out.
It's not all Taxi Driver.
Yeah, it's a Woody Allen movie.
Coming up after a short break, Govinda Angulo tells us about the experience of getting out of that apartment and into Sundance. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Browse the KCRW store and shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and merchandise. Shop to support KCRW only at kcrw.com/store.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Crystal Moselle, director of the new documentary, The Wolf Pack, and Govinda Angulo, one of the six brothers featured in the film. Growing up, the Angulo brothers were kept inside their New York apartment by a father who feared the outside world. But as the eldest boys hit adolescence, the power dynamic in the house began to shift. In the film, Mukundo Angulo, the first brother to venture out on his own, explains.
My father, his system was just like a ticking bomb. What did he expect when all of us become of age? We're still gonna do things his way?
I don't think our father knew we had it in us.
I guess he always saw us as the little boys who couldn't. And then we transformed into the boys who can.
Today, the Wolfpack is indeed transformed. They've traveled the country promoting their film, and the oldest brothers have started building careers of their own. But as Govinda Angulo, now 22 years old, tells us, when they first began to work with director Crystal Moselle in 2010, they were not ready to tell her their entire backstory.
We had some restraints to paint the whole picture of what our upbringing was and the story of our family. It didn't come until about a year or two into the process of this of this collaboration.
How did you present?
Just people who love movies and just to talk shop, and just our world was movies, and that's everything we would reference from. Like, let me tell you about the beach. That day when we went to the beach, it reminded me of the sand and Lawrence of Arabia. Little things like that that you don't hear people say.
And right.
She was kind of getting the impression, you have a very unusual story to tell. You guys have this passion for movies. And then we were getting more comfortable and more comfortable. And then we tell you, let me tell you why things are the way they are. And then an interview, another interview, until she could see the scope.
There was a certain point where, you know, I learned more of their story. And I realized that it was, you know, a lot more complex than I had realized before. And, you know, we had a talk and said, do you guys want to continue this? Do you want to tell me your story? And everybody decided to be on board with that. So
was that kids only or kids plus adult or adults?
It was kids
plural?
Only, but the power had shifted within the household.
Right.
By the time I got to the story, like there was nothing to
not so much,
you know, nothing to alarm me to call the authorities or
right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Govinda, but they would be like, Crystal's coming over.
That's how it was.
Right. And dad, mom, Crystal's coming over. Just letting you know.
Mm-hmm. So you find these kids, these amazing kids and with this amazing story. And how do you go about saying, I'm going to make this into a feature film? Like money-wise is what I'm talking about. How do you finance it?
I was working a lot as a freelance director. So I was doing all sorts of different jobs and juggling a million things. And I got really lucky and booked like 4 commercials in a row, I think in like 2012. Because before that, it was just really about shooting. After that, it got a little bit harder because I needed to hire an experienced editor who could really whip this into shape. And we were really lucky to work with Anat Sidi, who did Diatropia and Jesus Camp. So at that point, I just kind of started putting my feelers out to the world. And Isabella Zinkova, who's a producer friend of mine, she came over, she looked at some footage, and she didn't even ask me. She just started producing with me. And through her and separately through my friend Louise Sturges, we reached out to Verisimilitude, and Verisimilitude signed on to be our production company, and that's how we took it through.
So did they manage financing for you?
Yeah.
And did you say to the guys, we're shooting for Sundance here?
Yeah, but I mean, all
of us...
Or
were they saying, you better shoot for Sundance?
It was
we're in deep now, we want Sundance.
I mean, like making a documentary, it's like, you know, I had done an earlier edit that didn't really work out, and, you know, I didn't really know where the film was going to go and where the story was at that point.
So this editor was really critical. I mean, that's such a... People don't necessarily think about the importance of the editor.
Oh, it's everything for a documentary. It is. And she has such an amazing sensibility, and she's so sensitive, and it was such a perfect collaboration.
When did you find out that it was a yes for Sundance?
I didn't believe it.
Me neither.
That phone call that came through, we thought, this festival that's founded by Robert Redford, are you kidding me? And mom was a big fan of Robert Redford, so she just she jumped through the air. She was really excited.
So somebody called and said, hi, you're in at Sundance, and you went, like, who is this really?
It was Crystal, actually.
Oh, you called. So that must have been a really fun call to make. Although scary, maybe a little?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those moments where you're thinking in your head, okay, a lot of things are going to be different very soon.
Did you prepare for that in some way? Did you sort of sit down and have, like, Sundance boot camp? Like, this is going to be intense. This is going to be crazy.
Yeah.
We had a couple of conversations about it, and then we met in the production team's office And then we said, okay, this is how Sundance works. This is going to be our schedule. And so everyone was getting mentally prepared. But more than anything, we were just getting excited.
Super excited. Did you go to a bunch of movies?
Not as much as we would have liked to.
Yeah, that's because, not how it works.
Yeah.
You don't get to do that, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a high time in Utah. Everybody wants to go see the movies. But somebody told me, I believe it was Ross Kaufman, who director of Born in the Brothels, he gave me a little bit of a rundown of what Sundance is going to be like. And he said, if you don't get to go to see all these movies, just try skiing or tubing. You'll have fun in the mountains. So that was a great combination. Mom loves nature and the mountains, and my twin brother Narayana does too. So that was a really fun time.
You all went. Nobody was going to miss that, I suppose, from the of all the boys.
Don't leave one wolf behind.
No wolf cub left behind. Yeah. So Govinda, you're working now. You moved out. You have your own place, and you're working as a camera assistant camera person. Is that right?
Things change really quickly. Since Sundance, I've been shooting more, and I just shot my first film, and we shot in about 4 days, and Mukunda and I worked on a project with Vice Magazine as well.
Right.
And I shot that, just because I know digital cameras really well. I learned it through a production office, a rental camera rental house, Production Junction. They were a great mentor, and that was my first job that I got. So now I'm a freelancer in film and TV, and I'm just shooting stuff, and all this is really helping. So I thought, print out those business cards because you're going to need them.
Have you met any of your film heroes?
It's funny you should say that, because lately I've been trying to meet more cinematographers and just the directors too, because the director is the person that works the closest with a cinematographer. So some of these people, like Spike Jonze we met, and Jonathan Nolan we met at Sundance, they're all incredible people. They have such, you know, they have a humanity about them that we've learned that from meeting a lot of filmmakers so far.
Right. So you haven't seen the movie?
I have not. And
people
I do
would
it on,
not expect that, but go ahead.
I do it on purpose because I'm very self-conscious. And now that I want to be on the other side of the camera, the guy who's literally framing the actor, it's kind of hard. And if I see the movie, I might reflect back on a lot of things that I'm just not ready to reflect back on. It's like I told the story. I lived that. That was a chapter in my life. I'll revisit it someday.
Has everybody else in the family seen it?
They have. And Mom and Dad.
And what do they think?
They have the highest reviews about the movie.
Really? They like it?
Big thumbs up.
Crystal Moselle is director of The Wolf Pack, and Govinda Angulo is one of the brothers featured in the film. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
You can see Mirror Heart, a short film from Wolfpack Productions, which just went up at vice.com. And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business. Tomorrow's sun with building a scrape the sky.